Time to talk personal computers now. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you listening in. Before we get started, though, a big thanks to everybody who pitched in with contributions over the weekend. We made more than $775,000. Almost $280,000 of it came in the last 2 days alone, so we had a big close. And more than 5,200 members pledged and 1,560 new members to Wisconsin Public Radio Association. So that's pretty good.
That's awesome.
That's great. What isn't so great is that storm, worm, or whatever it was. Has that been killed? Or
I think the attention to it helps a lot in terms of getting all the AV companies prepared for them. So you see waves of infections, and some of them fall off and have to get fixed, and others, you know, are ready to battle it or weather it. I can tell you that if you're one of the users out there, that when you got your computer, it was brand new, and you subscribe to Norton, and then you get those little reminders to renew, and you don't renew, and you don't add something to defend your system, you're really at great peril, because once one of those infections gets on your system, what happens is it tries to compromise the installation of the expired antivirus, and it just really cobbles, you know, underneath the operating system, really makes a mess, and then trying to get something else on it becomes very difficult. And you know, I've seen some awful messes from that. You have to make your decision. You know, you have to go, okay, I'm going to update it and keep it current, and you know, just stay with it. Or if you're going to change before it ends. Don't, you know, wait until the last moment, because that's when the shields go down and something, you don't know what's being thrown at you.
Well, let's go to Joe in Eagle River. Joe, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry, and hi, Peter.
Hi.
Two important questions. First of all, how'd Tito and the boys do in Eagle River hockey?
Lost in double overtime by one goal.
Oh. It was a cold weekend.
Yeah, well, you know, if it was like the prior year, last year, which was the first annual Pond Hockey Championships, it was minus 20 plus, and I'm thank God that it wasn't like that when we were out there this year. That would have been awful.
So it's all relative, right?
That's right.
There you go. Peter, I dumped some JPEG photos onto a CD. I just have a CD burner, and I put it in my DVD player, hoping I could see it on TV, because I've seen other people do that. Well, needless to say, it didn't work. So what my questions are is, do I need to get a DVD burner, or do I need to get a better DVD player, or is there some software that I can use on my old laptop and CD burner so I can put the...
Step back here a second. You want to watch photos on, or you want to see them on a bigger screen?
On a TV.
On a TV. Okay. So the TV, what kind of hookup do you have with the TV?
I've got a DVD player, and I'm using some line-in, line-out kind of connections.
Okay. Have you, are you sure that the source is directed to the DVD, you know, player in terms of viewing things?
Yeah, because I watched rental movies at the later or earlier in the day.
All right. And you, so you burned a CD, is what you're saying, with the pictures?
Yeah. Took JPEGs off my laptop and just burned it onto a CD. Not...
Yeah. You know, that you might have to burn it to a DVD, because if it's a TV with a DVD player, it may not have the capability of actually looking at a CD.
Okay.
You have to look at the specs of the equipment to see if it meets, you know, the ability to look at the different media. It's not a given that just because it can accept a disc, that it reads and, you know, allows you to view DVDs, that it can accept a CD. Now, there are some players out there that will tell you that they're DVD for the movies, but they also will play MP3 compatible CDs and things like that. That's a little different, but you're talking about like an integrated DVD into the TV, or a DVD player that you typically watch for movies. Those, you know, depending upon the age, may only be DVD source only.
Oh.
I think you may have hit the nail on the head. Do you know anything about some free software called Picasa, or Microsoft has something called Photo Story 3?
Yeah.
What do you need to know?
Yeah.
Is that the software you'd use to burn photos onto a CD so you could watch it?
Well, you can. Typically, systems come with a product called Nero. And there are some others out there that allow you to burn a DVD or a CD with, whether it's movie files, picture files, music files, data files, and so forth, that allow that, you know, you to write to the different kinds of media. So it depends on what you have in your PC. The software, or almost like a service from Google, the Picasa, is it allows you to organize your content on your system, your pictures and so forth.
Okay.
May include the ability to burn it to a CD or DVD, but again, that's in conjunction with the operating system allowing you to do that. But you have to have the right device to be able to write it to. So like in a newer system, typically you see like a dual-layer DVD read-write drive that can also read and write to CDs.
Okay.
But again, if you're burning a CD and you don't have the machine that's compatible to read it, even though it looks like it can fit in it, you won't be able to see it.
That may be the problem.
I know it was funny on our trip up to Eagle River. We were talking about MP3s and CDs, and one of the guys goes, "Here, I got this, you know, CD. It's filled with all this great music and, you know, MP3 format." And the guy in the car that's driving is like, "Well, let's pop it in there and listen to it." We put it in, there's nothing.
Didn't work.
It was because it wasn't MP3 compatible. So it couldn't, even though it looked like a CD, and the guy that brought it with him knew that it had all this music on it, we couldn't listen to it because the player didn't have the compatibility with the media.
Had that experience too. I guess I need to upgrade my vehicles and my TV.
I guess so, Joel. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Yep.
And Joanne in Neshkoro, your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Okay, well, the fellow that answered the phone, I said I couldn't find my back and forward on my new Internet Explorer 7, but I just found that. But it's just so dull, it blends right into the background.
Yeah.
But I have two other questions. I have this friend, Betty, that we email each other back and forth, and all at once, for no reason at all of her emails to me end up in the delete file unopened. I never see them until I go into my delete file.
Have you set any filters by chance on your what are you using for receiving email?
Internet Outlook Express.
Outlook Express.
Yeah, and I haven't done anything to it. And she's the only one that happens with. And everything I send her goes into her spam.
And she's using the same thing on her end?
Right, yeah. It just started.
Yeah, there might be some filters set on that are causing the messages that you receive from her to go into your delete box. It's typically a filter that's either identifying it as spam or something that you've set a rule for to tell your computer, hey, anything that comes in this way, I don't want to see it, send it right to my delete box. So you have to pry around a little bit. There's a resource called Inside, I believe it's insideoe.com. If you go to that, there's a lot of stuff about Outlook Express online at that resource. But the other thing is, if you look around across your main menu, across the top of the application, you can go into, you can't really hurt something unless you start changing it, but If you read it, you'll see some of these things are fairly obvious. And one of the lists has the ability for you to set rules for incoming email.
Okay.
I've got a tip listed on my tips page at infostar.com.
Okay.
That kind of someone was nice enough to make it almost pictorial based, where they show you how to set the rules or change the rules.
Okay.
And I forgot what tip it is, but it's, I think it may be number 7, but it's about email and blocking spam and making changes to Outlook Express for the rules. And okay. I would look there and see if maybe something has been set up. I don't know if the default of the latest version of Outlook Express would change some of those things, but you know,
never know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if somehow settings got changed and all of a sudden, you know, your stuff is getting filtered to the delete box and you didn't have it set up that way. But you have to go underneath the settings and go in there and change them so that it doesn't do that anymore.
Okay, thanks. Now I have one more question, though, mm-hmm. as long as I've found the other one. Every time, all of a sudden, this happened, too, when I start my computer up, I get a common file. It's just an empty file, picture of an empty file, and it's called common. And so when it gets working good, I have to delete that window to mm-hmm. get to anything else. Is there any way to get rid of that?
So you're saying it's a window that comes up?
Yeah, it's a window. Mm-hmm. It comes up. It's a small window. I suppose I could make it big if I wanted to. And it just has this picture, this empty. Well, no, it's just empty. It's just this common on top.
Hmm. Is there a little squiggle associated with it on the desktop? You know, they...
Yes, down below in the by the start and in the clock, their common is down there.
Hmm. Again, probably what I would direct you to is on the tips page.
Okay.
There's I forgot what number it is, but it talks about Windows startup.
Okay.
And the things that should be in your Windows startup, and what version of Windows are you using?
XP.
XP. So, for example, just to give you how to get there, if you click on Start, then click on Run,
okay.
and then type in MSConfig. So Microsoft, it's short for Microsoft Config. So MS Config, and then you hit Enter, you're going to get a bunch of tabs that come up, and all the way to the right is a Startup tab.
Okay.
And when you click on that, there are boxes that are checked and there are boxes that are not checked.
Okay.
And you might be able to find, you know,
okay.
fairly easily that common file startup that is starting up in your system and uncheck that box.
Okay.
Now, if you uncheck all of them and then apply and say okay, those things that would be coming up in your little system tray over in the right-hand corner of your screen, those won't come up anymore after you restart your machine because you've told them not to start up again. If there's something in there that you needed, you would have to go one by one to try and identify which ones need to go back in.
Okay.
So that's the only, you know, not downfall, but... I've been on systems where there are probably like a dozen processes being opened up on startup. And what's the bad part about that? The bad part is that if you don't need the majority of them, let's say you don't need 10 out of 12, and they're starting up, they're slicing the CPU resource and your system resources down so there's less for you to use when you're trying to run other applications.
Yeah.
So by removing them from the startup makes your system a little faster, a little bit more efficient.
Thanks a lot, Joanne, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. We'll go back to the phones and to Mark in Rockton next. Mark, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I don't know if my Outlook 03 program is haunted or I'm just not any better at training it than I am my cat. So, Peter, maybe you can help me.
Okay.
I'll try.
Here's three symptoms here, and maybe they're related, maybe they're unrelated. When I collaborate a lot on documents, Word documents with others, and when we pass these back and forth, I never have had this problem with prior versions. They always come in a kind of a reading layout, and I must go to use the track changes edits. I need to basically go back and change the view to quote normal, and I don't want to do that every time I get a document. The other two points is, when you're in Word, and I use Word as my email editor in Outlook, you can customize and choose different buttons. You might want the Word count button up there. Or you might want to be able to you know, use a formatting like number bulleted points. And so I go and I choose them, and they never stay there. They always change, and it seems to be different each time I open the program up. And the third point, and this is a real bugger, when you open a new message in Outlook and you click on the button 2, and then you get a choice of your contacts, and you have a little slider that you can slide down and alphabetically choose who you're sending the message to. I can't use that slider. I have to click on the window 2 or 3 times before the slider will actuate. And I've never had that problem before. I've run XP before. I've run all the Outlook programs or the Office suite before, and I've never had any of these problems, Peter.
Now, have you? Is it something that just all of a sudden happened all at once, or is it been going on for a month? Or
well, actually, this is the second machine I'm running these programs on. They're actually separate operating systems. Separate, in other words, I didn't transfer the software.
Okay, so you're saying the symptoms are the same on both machines?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Are they both your machines, or are they ones at your office?
No, they're both my machines.
Okay. Have
one, one's a desktop and one's a laptop.
What version of Microsoft Office are you using?
O3.
Have you run updates on those?
Yep.
So you're all current with all the Microsoft
According
fixes.
To Microsoft, I'm all current.
Okay. I don't know if it's something that in conjunction with something else on your system is causing it to be buggy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes I've seen where if you load something before another application, it causes one application to run weird and not true the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
As far as trying to uninstall it and reinstalling it, if you've downloaded all the updates, what I typically do with those kind of updates is I download them to a folder called Downloads.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I have them, and I may even rename them and date them myself so I can identify them. Because some of the manufacturers, I look at how they're naming things, and I go, my God,
right.
What are you calling this thing?
Smart idea.
Because it's not a typical definition that you would know, but maybe a programmer from their company would. So, if you kind of prepare yourself for that, and then, of course, back up your data, but uninstalling the application is not going to affect your data files, but of course, back up your data files just to make sure. And then reinstall the application and see if that helps. If that doesn't help, and I know that's a lot of work to go through, you may want to go to some of the online resources and see if there are known problems. Like what you're experiencing, the MVPS.org site, the Microsoft Most Valuable Professionals that, focus on Outlook applications,
mm-hmm.
Might be a good resource to go to. Check out some of the online forums that you might find there. On the Virus Info Center page at Infostar.com, I have links to the MVPS and some of the other Microsoft forums, the news groups out there. I would check and see if you find some answers to some of the specific questions. Because I know the better you get at keying in some of these questions to some of the forums, you'd be amazed that you're not the only one having the problem. And it just might be something specific to your computer type and what you're trying to do, and maybe an application that someone else has identified, like I said, that runs in conjunction with Office that's causing the problem. You just
have to query
those databases and forums and
see what comes up.
Yep.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks a lot for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Carl in Wisconsin Dells, I believe you are next. Hi, Carl.
How you doing today?
Great. Hi. Thanks for calling.
I got a comment on the guy that's trying to watch video or pictures on a TV.
Yeah.
It all depends on your DVD player. If a DVD player is capable of playing pictures, JPEGs or RAW, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Also depends on the size of your picture. If your picture's too big, and it depends on the resolution of your DVD player. So that's two basic things that he needs to look at. If he does upgrade his DVD player, he needs to make sure it does play JPEG and the picture size is compatible with his camera.
Good points.
Very good points. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, appreciate it, Carl. Thank you very much. You can join in, by the way. We have some open lines now at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. Peter Green answering computer and software questions today. Let's go to Robert in Appleton next. Robert, hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering about the NIC cards for the laptops and if the Sony Vaio is a step above the other ones that are comparable. As I'll be doing face-to-face streaming video, and that's why I need the best card. I'm overload driver. So which card and which laptop do I need to be targeting?
When you say, what kind of card are you referring to?
An internet card.
Broadband,
the faster the better.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things you have to look at. Number one is there's regular standard Ethernet, which is 10 million bits per second. There's fast Ethernet, which is 100 million bits per second. And then there's gigabit Ethernet, which is 1,000 million bits per second. Megabits per second. That's going to be your fastest standard, and that's typically hardwired, so that's, you know, something that you're going to plug into your system. So unless you have a laptop or a desktop that specifically has that built into it, you're going to have to add a card that will take you to that speed.
Which one to actually pick up? It's going to be in the truck with.
You mean which brand to?
Yeah, which one I should go after. I have a couple friends that said a couple different brands are quicker or more reliable, and I really have no idea which one to purchase.
You know, I've put in some just, I guess I would call them generic cards, and they work just fine, and they get me the throughput. They're really pretty straightforward to use. You could probably go out there on CNET.com and look up some reviews for some of the, you know, different cards that are out there. Just do a search on gigabit Ethernet controllers, and you'll probably find ones that have been reviewed and rated.
But you haven't had any problems.
I haven't had any problems. It's great having the extra speed. If you're putting it in an environment where you have a network, you need to make sure you have a switch that can handle the gigabit throughput, because it's not standard that a switch automatically handles that high speed. It has to be rated for that high speed.
Yeah, it's going to switch. It's not going to be at home. It's going to be in the big rig with me.
Okay.
It's going to be completely wireless.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, you know, in terms of the ISP, you're really, you know, if you're communicating via the internet, you're subject or limited to them being the limiting link in, you know, what's fast. So
okay.
if you're hooked up to an ISP that only allows you to download at 256 bits per second, 256,000 bits per second, you know,
right,
that's as fast as you can go. If you find one that's at, you know, five megabits per second, you know, then, you know, you're going to go faster. So you're really limited by, you know, downloads in terms of what your internet service provider is giving you access to. But if you're in a networked environment and everything's hooked up at 1 gigabit throughput and you have switches that allow that to happen, then everything communicates at that high speed.
Okay.
All right.
So hopefully that helps.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Sean and DePere, your turn. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a comment on the guy who had problems with Office 2003. It sounds like he might have permissions problems. I've seen some strange things happen. If he's not logged, excuse me, if he's not logged in as an administrative user, he might want to check permissions to see if that's causing the issues.
Yeah, that can affect what you're allowed to do, and then it depends on. There could be some other issues too, as related to if you're. In his case, not necessarily on a network, but whether or not you're operating under what they call a domain environment versus a work group, permissions are affected differently that way as well.
Yeah, good point.
Yep.
Thanks, Sean.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Diane in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I am working on a personal computer at home at my office, and we are on a server. But I also work off the C drive on my computer, and I'm having, when I do my drop-down menus to switch back and forth between the different folders or the drives, I have a hesitation of about 3 minutes. I have to almost double-click it twice, and then it'll say not responding, and then I wait for 3 minutes, and all of a sudden the monitor will flash, and I'm able to move in between the different folders and files and drives. Do you have any idea? I have checked with Microsoft because it only happens with Microsoft programs, Word, Excel, and Microsoft Outlook.
Hmm.
I've talked to a number of different computer guys, and I thought, well, maybe one more will have an idea.
Yeah. But the Microsoft people didn't even have an answer?
Well, no. I've been on Microsoft, their Microsoft website for the last week trying to find out if there was anybody else having that problem. And there's nothing that I can find. So then I emailed Microsoft, and they basically told me to do that, and that's what I've already done. Now they're telling me my only other thing would be to actually call their support, and of course that costs money. And I thought, well, maybe it's a quick fix. But
what are you using for your desktop operating system? Windows?
XP.
Is it home, professional?
Professional.
Okay.
Professional.
And you said this is at your office where you're operating connected to a server.
Yes. Okay. And I can't, and when I go to open up something, it automatically goes to my C drive under my name. But if I have to switch to something that I want to email something out of the S drive, which is our server drive,
right,
that's where I have problems.
Now, when you log on, you have all your drives connected to you, correct?
Yes.
You don't, you know, each time go in and connect to them.
Right, and we have personal settings, so it goes right to our personal settings. Nobody else in the office is having the troubles.
How many connections?
How many computers on that server?
Yeah.
Six of us.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
And
I've talked to our computer people, you know, that set up our server, and they can't seem to find anything wrong. And
how long have you had your machine?
How long have I had it?
Yeah.
Going into 3 years.
Yeah, you may... You know, I don't know exactly what you do on your system, but something that I typically do, and it sounds like there might be a little tug of war going on over hard drive space.
Yeah.
And I don't know if your system administrators know how to do these little tricks, and I've talked about them over the years, but it's really pretty simple. When you right mouse click on your recycle bin,
right,
and click on properties, you should resize your recycle bin to be about 1% of your disk space. It's by default set to 10%.
Right.
And then in system tools and system restore, if you click on that, you'll see a little link there that says system restore settings. You should click on that and make that from 12% to 1% of your drive, and that'll reclaim, what is that, 20 plus percent of your hard drive will now be reallocated to be used by the system. So if you've got a lot of stuff that's being stored on your drive and you're bumping up against some limits based on the memory of your operating system, which uses swap space on the hard drive,
right,
and temporary files that you create with your applications, and you know that could vary in terms of size of the files, you may be fighting over hard drive space. And the operating system is like, well, I understand where all these things go, but I need to do some shuffling around before I can really get there.
That's what it's acting like. Like it can't find it.
Right.
You know, it takes forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you try, go
into the recycle bin?
Yeah, right mouse click on the recycle bin, click on properties, and then change it to 1%, and click on start, then accessories, then system tools, then system restore, and you'll see system restore settings. You click on that, change that to from 12% to 1%, click apply. You may even want to reboot your computer.
Sure.
And then bring it back up and see if that helps.
I'm willing to try anything at this point.
Good luck, Diane.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Bye-bye. I hope we hear back from her to see if that actually worked. Dennis in Brookfield. Hi to you. Thanks, Dennis.
Hi. How are you today?
Great.
Good.
I'm having a problem with my computer where if somebody sends me something and I download it, if it's a document, not photos or anything like that, but if someone sends me a proposal and there's figures involved, when I go to download it and then open it up, the screen pops up, which is tan, and right in the center of it, all I get is a bunch of, you know, the best I can explain it is hieroglyphics. It's just a bunch of different symbols and everything, and I never can make heads nor tails out of what the attachment is saying once I download it.
Do you know the sender that's sending these documents to you?
Yes, for the most part, yes. Okay. I'm on the board of the Condominium Association, and they're sending me some things, but other people who send me things that I've gotten for many years all of a sudden will send me some kind of a proposal, and it just won't come up. It just won't do anything.
Yeah.
What are you using for receiving email?
You mean like who's my email person? Or
no, are you like, using Outlook, Outlook Express, using any, you know, when you're receiving this email, what application are you using to receive it?
Do you mean like Microsoft?
Right. Well, is it Outlook Express?
I'm ignorant in that respect because it's nothing that came with my computer, and everything that's on my computer is Microsoft.
Okay.
XP, I think.
Okay. It could be something as simple as some preference settings that need to be changed. It could also be the source. Do you know if you're getting email sent and you're part of a group? Have you talked to other people that are in this group that have no problem with what they're receiving?
No, I haven't. And there's a friend of mine who is pretty computer savvy, and when I've downloaded something when they were there, you know, tried to change things like European and US and the US and some other things, and no matter what they did, it just wouldn't have it come up. It would just be a bunch of gobbledygook.
What I would probably do is the resource I mentioned earlier, InsideOE.com, Inside Outlook Express, it's got some good information on there in terms of typical settings and, you know, handling downloads of attachments and things like that. And it might be something as simple as you making some changes that they recommend to your settings.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would probably try and do. And, you know, if you're having difficulty, you could try and give me, you know, shoot me an email off of my website, which is infostar.com. But I would also try to get confirmation from other people. You know, one of the underlying things is to assume that just because you're getting an email that doesn't work, that other people that are in that group are getting the same email and it's working for them.
Mm-hmm.
The sender might be having a problem.
Okay.
If you're telling me that everything that you get sent as an attachment is being a problem, then it's really specific to your system. You know, no matter who's sending it to you, whether I send you a picture or a PDF file or a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet or, you know, or a movie file, that no matter what you get, you can't play it, then your Outlook Express may be set up not to receive attachments.
Okay.
And in that case, a default setting may have gotten changed that you had set up prior where it was working and now it's not working because maybe you did an upgrade and for whatever reason settings got changed.
Okay.
Because there are settings in Outlook Express, and I'm assuming here that that's what you're using, that you can change it so that you won't allow attachments. So even though it looks like you're getting an attachment, you can't do anything with it.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Pat in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm running Windows XP Home Edition. I've got Norton installed on my system, and when I try running the Norton Disk Doctor, I get a message saying that the operating system has exclusive access to it, and my Disk Doctor cannot run. I'm wondering where do I look to see who has the exclusive access to it, or how do I go around that so I can run my Disk Doctor?
I would probably, to me that sounds like what's going on is Windows has taken control of something that Disk Doctor wants to have access to,
mm-hmm.
and it's locking it out. So to try and find the answer to that, There's two approaches. One is to bring Windows up in the safe mode, which in most cases would probably remove that exclusive access and allow Norton Disk Doctor to do whatever it's trying to do, you know, to work.
Okay.
The other thing is there might be some setting that you can change within Norton to allow you to work the way it's supposed to, but I don't know that specific answer. In Symantec.com, which is who Norton is made by,
mm-hmm.
might have like an FAQ of frequently asked questions in their support area, their website, that could help you with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
But that's what it sounds like. It's trying to do something that the operating system is grabbed hold of, and it won't let it move forward.
Okay. Another question I have is I run antivirus every night.
Okay.
One day it takes 45 minutes to scan the system. The next day it'll take 3 to 4 hours.
Do you clear temporary files at all?
Mm-hmm. I run the clean sweep through that.
Okay.
And then I also have the system mechanics that I run.
Mm-hmm. When it takes longer to run, do you have applications open?
No, because I run it like at 2 in the morning.
Okay. And so basically everything's closed up. And,
yep.
The only thing I can think of is you said you clean it every time?
Right.
So after every day's use, you clear all the cache, all the history.
Yep.
Why?
That's interesting that it changes that much.
And it's consistent. It's every other day it does it.
Do you get a lot of emails and don't delete those? And I'm just trying, you know, it sounds like it's going through less files.
Right.
When it's quicker.
Well, it still goes through the same number of files.
Right.
But it just takes longer one night than the next.
Boy. Who knows?
I would, you're using Norton, you said.
Right.
Yeah. I would probably email them and ask them why.
Okay.
You know, why is it take longer one day versus the next when everything is exactly the same?
Mm-hmm. Where,
why is there a difference between
right.
the two?
Yeah. So give that a try, Pat, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Larry Mueller here. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Anne in Sparta is next. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hi.
I love your program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm running XP Home.
Okay.
And within the last month, my computer just quit staying asleep. I could usually walk away from it, and it would fall asleep. And it would stay there till I came back and wiggled my mouse, and it would come back to life. Now, within 10 minutes, it wakes up, and I can hear my scanner click. And I go in there, and it says it's 12 or 14 programs running. And so I have to click them all off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every day I've been turning it off completely. And I've gone in and changed the settings back to where I had them before. And I've done this 3 or 4 times, and it still hasn't worked. So now I've just been turning it off every day.
Have you, do you have any antivirus program on your system?
Yes.
Okay.
I had Norton.
Uh-huh.
And because they didn't bring out a 2007 Norton system works, I waited until it was expired,
mm-hmm.
although it was still working. I just didn't get the upgrades. Then I found an AVG
right.
from Grisoft.
Okay.
So I put that in, and I uninstalled my Norton. But this started before I did all this antivirus.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you said you have a lot of programs running.
That's what it says, but I've only had, like, to click off 3 or 4.
Uh-huh. What I would try and do is if you, we talked about this earlier, maybe there's an application that's running in the background that you don't know that is affecting it to,
mm-hmm.
to hibernate or
mm-hmm.
go to sleep. So if you click on start, click on run, and then type in msconfig.
Config,
and hit enter. And then go to the startup tab. And look at note, you know, all the different things that are checked off, and uncheck them, and then click apply. And you might have to put back what you feel you want, you know, after you've worked with your system. But see if that, you know, makes a change to let the system go back to sleep after you stop using it.
Yeah.
But and you'll have to, when you click OK and exit, it'll say, do you want to restart your system or do you want to exit without restart? You know, you can restart it yourself or you could just click on exit with restart and it'll start up Windows again. And see if that makes a change.
So that one program running is what could be interfering, right?
Right. Now, the thing is, you said you have AVG. You'll probably notice a couple of icons, or not icons, but squares that, that list AVG.
Right.
You might want to leave those checked, because that's for the antivirus. But the other ones you probably would want to uncheck.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Ann.
Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Karen in Madison. Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
I have two hopefully uncomplicated problems.
Okay.
I seem to have varying speed with email and internet. Sometimes it's right there, pops right up, no problem. Sometimes it seems to, especially internet. Is it true that if the internet's very busy, it can slow down my response?
Who are you using for an ISP, internet service provider?
Outlook support, Outlook today.
Are you using a dial-in? Are you using broadband?
No, DSL, TDS, and Microsoft.
Okay. Do you know what speed you're operating at with them? Do you know if it's 256, 512, 768?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But I did not. I don't think I've... I don't know. I could probably check on that. But sometimes it's really quite fast. Is this true of some computers, or does everybody run into this on occasion?
It can be a problem, but what I would do is I would check with your internet service provider and call up and talk to tech support and tell them that you have a question about the speed that you're accessing the internet with them and the inconsistency of the service in terms
especially the email opening is kind of strange.
Yeah, you know, make them aware of it and tell them, you know, the times that you typically use it.
Yeah,
And they may be able to provide you with some answers, as in we've had a problem in that area with access points, you know, for you trying to get in. They may say, well, we see here, you know, different spikes in your access, and it could be because your equipment is a little bit flaky, so they may.
I will go that route, and I have one very quick thing.
Sure.
I have each year, as I've done the new tax year, I've uninstalled the 2 years before. In other words, 05 is feeding 06, so I uninstalled 03 and 04.
Okay.
I can't get 03 out of there. I can get most of it out, but it won't take the last 13. Whatever they are. I want to say MG, but that's not right. Like 05 has 249.
Files?
No. What is it? Space, memory. Using. And 03 is still there and has 13. So, you know, it's hardly there, but I can't make it go away. It just says it's still running and it will not uninstall it.
So
it won't uninstall that last little bit.
Which program is it?
TurboTax. And I have no clue what the last little bit is, because I can't open it either. I can't look at it. I can't uninstall it. And it's obviously like just 10 sentences or something, but it's aggravating.
Yeah. And it says it's still running?
Yeah. And it's not. I can't find it anywhere in the computer.
Yeah, other than trying to hack at it with, you know, going in underneath the operating system and trying to remove hidden attributes and things like that, I would probably just, you know...
Live with it.
Well, you either live with it or, you know, try to email them and see if you get a reply from them to, you know, help you get rid of it.
Well, I'm about to uninstall 05.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, because I've got 06 all done.
Right.
So maybe in the process, it'll take 03 with it.
I remember one year, and I think it might be 03, I had TurboTax, and there was something buggy that bothered me about it, and I switched in 04 because to a different provider.
Well, I like the fact that it takes all the information from the previous year and funnels it into the current year.
Yeah, me too. I've used it too.
Yeah, I remember I just had a problem one year, and I just decided to switch, even though I had a rekey and stuff. That didn't bother me as much as something that I objected to. I forget now what I objected to, but I'm using it now, and it works fine.
Yeah.
But the uninstall can be a little tricky if it has set attributes on your machine, and the uninstall didn't complete, and there's stuff left over. And it can't get rid of it, then you have to try to get into the what they call the dot prompt on your system and start, hacking it, removing files, or, like you said, live with it.
Well, I'm probably going to live with it. It's just a minor irritation because I don't uninstall very often. And when I do, there it is.
Yeah. The other thing with TurboTax... because it is, fairly consistent year after year, is some of the hooks into the operating system you don't want to mess with because they may actually be reusing certain files.
Well, that occurred to me, too, except I took out 04.
And that worked.
Beautifully. It's gone. So maybe it's only the odd years.
So did you take 04 out before 03?
Pardon?
Did you remove 04 before you removed 03, or has this 03 been lingering?
I thought I removed 03 first, but I have no, I can't tell you that.
Maybe it needed to be first.
Yeah, maybe I didn't.
Don't reinstall 4.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Yep, bye-bye. And on to Mike in Richland Center. Oh, boy. Mike, hello.
Hi, good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Thanks for sharing your expertise. I'm a virtual beginner in the PC world. And some people have recommended flash drives. I know nothing about them. Is there any source of information for uses and how to? None of these things come with instructions.
Do you know, when you said someone recommended the flash drives for you, do you know what they're used for?
Well, she said that you can use them to back up certain...
Right.
You can use them with your digital camera.
Yep.
Et cetera, but I have very little knowledge.
Okay, typically a flash drive, it's an external memory, so it becomes recognized as another drive or device that your computer can store to.
Right.
So your digital camera typically has a little bit of internal memory, and then it has these little compact memory cards.
Right.
There might be a micro SD for a cell phone and an SD card, and they go by a variety of different names. Sometimes computers have readers where they'll look at like maybe seven different kinds of memory sticks.
Okay.
The flash drives typically have a USB interface to them, and they come in different sizes. So, I mean, I noticed in the paper that if you bought a couple of like HP ink cartridges, you got a 256 megabyte flash drive for free,
uh-huh.
After you send in the stuff, the mail-in rebate kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So depending upon what you're trying to back up or transfer from one machine to another will dictate how big a flash drive you want. So I've seen prices this weekend, I think, for 4 gigabyte flash drives, which is a pretty decent size, for about $60. Sometimes without mail-in rebates, that's just a special they're having.
Uh-huh.
That stores a lot of stuff on it because, if you look back at hard drives back in like the 96, 97 vintage, that's about the size of a hard drive in a typical desktop.
Uh-huh.
So now this little flash drive is storing 4 gigabytes.
There some literature that I can find where I can read about the variety of uses and how-tos?
You could probably go online. CNET.com is a good source.
Okay.
And they actually review brands.
Uh-huh.
not just you know, tell you about the drive, but also they might have some manufacturers that, you know, have a maybe a great feature that they like. But they are good sources for backing up. You can stick them in your pocket, in your shirt pocket, your coat pocket, or whatever. Don't put them next to a magnet.
Right.
And it allows you to take your data file, not really your applications, but your data file from one machine. You know, unless you've got a compacted application in one file, and then you want to expand it and install it on another machine, you could do it that way. But you could take your data file from work and bring it home and vice versa.
I see.
Okay.
All right. I'll get on CNET.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Mike. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, with us today here on the IdeasNet. And he will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news and we'll be back with Peter. Stay with us. We'll be back. Talking Computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Thanks for listening in, by the way, and join us if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Pete, at this time of the show, we always have a top 10 list, and what do you have for us today?
Well, with all the news with the stock market, I thought people would really want to be tuned in. Aside from just listening to radio and TV online, there's a lot of excellent resources out there. This first one is called businesswire.com, and I've listed about a half a dozen other sources that can give you lots of information on breaking news and regulatory filings and so forth. Number two is another free antivirus download, and it's called Avira. And their website is free-av.com. And I also posted that on the Virus Info Center page at infostar.com. And I don't know if you heard this in the news, that AAA is now offering their triptych online to anyone.
Oh.
And I don't know if you have any. I remember my parents using that thing. Mm-hmm. And they'd, you know, wait to get in the mail this really cool-looking triptych. And it's been online, but you had to be a member. Well, now it's free. Just have to go to AAA.com. And it looks really cool. There are a lot of, it's a great resource for people traveling because it's not just mapping out your trip, but providing access with a lot of other information as related to, you know, updated gasoline prices, you know, with the way things change. This next one, and boy, I don't know how long we've talked about peer-to-peer networking over the internet. And, you know, you go back prior to Napster and, you know, that being shut down. And recently what made the news was BitTorrent, which is a popular one. We haven't talked about them on the air, but they have a community, Larry, of over 135 million users.
Oh,
135
man.
Million users. And what's population of this country? 250 maybe?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So, you know, and this is a global peer-to-peer community that's hooked up, and BitTorrent, it's BitTorrent.com. It's the application is free, but what they're trying to tap into is some of the pay-per use content. So they've relaunched their site, and this is where you can download music, videos, movies, games, and more. And so I've put links to that and a couple other things. Stuff that I've seen recently in the paper that I know I've talked about vacation homes and finding them in different countries, but how about being able to exchange your home for someone else's home in another country? And you think, well, boy, that I don't know if I really want to do that. Well, there's an association organization that was established in 1953, and it's called HomeLink.org, and they have over 12,000 home swappers from over 69 countries throughout the world. So, you know, that might be an option to look at in terms of traveling. Number six, also in the news recently, is called Blinks, BLINKX.com. It's an internet search engine specializing in video content. And it's more difficult to search for video content than it is using a text-based search engine, which would be something like Google, and even though they own YouTube. So Blinks claims that they've got the better way to do it, and their link is up there. Number seven was, I have to kind of chuckle at this, but it's entertaining to just see it happen. If you type in cwindowsvista.com, so S-E-E, windowsvista.com. It's the official multimedia presentation website to detail features about Vista and applications using it and so forth. What's funny about it is you let it go through its presentation, its opening presentation, because it hits right away with you got to have your speakers on and the guy is talking to you. And then I'm, you know, hooking it into my webpage and, you know, to be posted. And all of a sudden it starts going, hey, you know, like, why aren't you making a choice? We got things to do here, you know. And it starts talking to me like, get going here. You know, I don't have a watch, but it's ticking somewhere. So anyhow, it's a little entertaining. Just wait. Just don't do anything after you listen to the opening. Number eight, this also again in the news, but and it's one of the few websites I've reposted over the years. It's called fueleconomy.gov, but I actually posted the link to the new 2008 fuel economy tests, which have been changed. So if you recently purchased a car, they've got a table there, and it will show you what the old was versus the new.
And so, they all went down, or most of them did.
Yeah, I don't know if any of them went up. Number nine is a business-to-business marketplace for the apparel and fashion industry, and it's called Fiber to Fashion. So it's F-I-B-R-E, the number two, and then fashion.com. And I know we're all, not all of us, but some of us anxious for the upcoming golf season.
I am.
Or spring. And if you go to golflink.com, it's a golf resource with access to golf courses, resources, golf schools, and a lot more, and all that stuff and more is up there at infostar.com.
Sounds great. All right, let's go to Eric in Appleton now. Eric, hello to you.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi. Good. I got a new computer just a few weeks back, and every time that I go to even just get on it, as soon as I start it up, it says that I have a driver incompatibility issue and it will be shut down. I'm just wondering, I'm forgive my computer ignorance, but so I don't know what driver it's shutting down or.
How soon does it do it after you start up the system?
Yeah, after it runs, it's Vista. So as soon as I start, as soon as the first page kind of pops up, that's when it shows me at the bottom that it has an issue.
Okay. Did you buy the system locally, or is it something that was shipped to you, or?
Yeah, it was shipped. It's a Dell.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on, you know, how you want to treat it, but it's something to me that should be dealt with Dell.
Okay.
Because you shouldn't be having that kind of problem, especially with being a new system.
It gives me like a website, or you know. Tells me to check online to see, you know, if there's a solution, and so it checks for solutions, and then it doesn't find one.
Right.
It says, you know, we will, you know, update you when there's an update available.
Hmm. Yeah, I would probably contact Dell.
Okay.
You know, use the information that they gave you, and you could either email them or call them, but I would follow through because there's definitely a problem with one of the hardware devices in your system that either inadvertently got installed with something that wasn't compatible, or there's a glitch, and it could be a mechanical problem where, you know, a part actually went bad and it's now communicating that, you know, it's not compatible and it won't work.
Okay.
And you're saying it's shutting down your system?
Not everything. It just says it's going to shut down the driver.
Right. If you go to the control panel, do you know how to go to the control panel in the system?
Yeah, sure.
if you go to the system part in the control panel and then click on hardware and look at the devices, there might be a yellow exclamation or some kind of alert that tells you which is, you know, what component is being the problem.
Okay.
But I would definitely give Dell a call because it's that shouldn't be happening with a new system.
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Eric. And Corey in Whitehall, your turn. Hi, Corey.
Hi.
Hi.
I had just a question about it's actually a matter of opinion on what you think about the 2007 antivirus program for Norton, because I've had my computer about 2 years and it comes from Dell, and of course it's got the pre-installed Norton program
right.
on it.
Right.
And I've renewed it for the last 2 years, $80 a year.
Right.
And last year I had it repaired by them, and it cost me $100. And this year I had the same repair done for another $100. And I was wondering, do you think this program is a reliable program, or should I go with a free version of something else, which I don't have no problems with?
When you say a repair, what kind of repair are you having done?
I have no idea. The Auto Protect on the program did not work this year, which is mm-hmm. about a month ago.
Okay.
And they transferred me over to their support team, and they did a bunch of stuff, and it took like, 3 hours, 4 hours.
Wow.
And it was up and running again.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you the game plan, okay, is related to Norton, okay? The game plan for Norton is they have an agreement with the manufacturers that they ship their software out with, okay, mm-hmm. that any of those products, any of the Norton licenses that are sold, they usually get a commission on.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if when it's renewed that they also get an annuity or a commission on the renewal from you.
Yeah.
That may very well be true. But because they've been so successful at marketing their software, their antivirus software and tools out there, they've become a large target. So anytime that you don't do an update and something happens to get into your system, the first thing that a worm, a virus, a Trojan tries to go after is to compromise, you know, yeah. the Norton that's on the system so it won't be disinfected. So not wanting to be a big target, I've never subscribed to them.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you that, my God, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread for a PC, or no, it's the worst thing. But all I could say is it's a very large target. And if there's something out there that's replicating, unless you keep your system up to date, no system is really 100% protected. You're more than likely to get as good a protection with another product that may even be free. And that's why you have people using AVG. There's Avast, the Vera program I mentioned earlier. There's Bitdefender. There's ClamWin, which is a free internet project out there that's also an antivirus program. So those are all at no cost. All you have to do is download them and install them, and they keep themselves up to date.
Okay. Yeah, because Norton, I don't know, Norton just seems to be, I don't mean to be negative, but it sounds like they set it up that way so you end up spending more money every year on it.
Yeah, they're you know, wanting you to be part of their annuity and pay in and, you know, to be a annual subscriber.
But to cause problems on your computer, you know, and having a stop page come up on your, you know, screen and stuff, and then they tell me right away it's a virus, and then they transfer you to somebody, and then it costs you a lot of money. And,
yeah.
You know, and my gurus tell me that Norton's not any good.
Mm-hmm.
They tell me to go with a free program, but that's a matter of opinion.
I've done that for years. Actually, for a very long time, I didn't even use any antivirus programs. I do now, but I used to for years. I didn't use any because I was trying to see what was coming at me and seeing how mm-hmm. bad it was. And then it got to a point where I was like, I need to turn something on, but I'm not paying for this.
Yeah.
So I've never paid for virus protection.
Okay.
All right.
That's all I need to know. Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks, Corey.
And they're all lit. You know, if you go to the infostar.com and then click on the Virus Info Center page, and then you look for AV Help right in the top third, all the links are there for all the antivirus programs that are for free. There are free scanners. There's also spyware, anti-spyware links there too, and firewall stuff. So a lot of stuff that I don't pay for that's out there for free that people want to, you know, just fight them off with.
Thanks again, Corey. Ramsey and Delavan, we go to you now. Hi, Ramsey.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
Good. First of all, I want to say you guys do a fantastic job, and I would urge everyone to go out and become a member. It's not too late.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I have a couple of quick issues. First of all, I just built a new computer, and I'm having a problem with my updates. I always get the updates, and what's happening is it seems like every time I shut down, I've got one update that it gives you the option to shut down without updating or to install the updates.
Yep.
It's doing it every time. There's one update that's installing every time, and I have a suspicion that it's the same one, and the OS is just not understanding that it's already been installed. Are you familiar with this?
So you're current all the way through the last one?
I update every time that I'm supposed to, and it's been in the last, I only built the computer 2 weeks ago, and it didn't start until after about a week, and then it seems like, I'm a big fan of hibernation, so I always hibernate my computer, but every time I do want to shut it down, it wants to install an update, and it does, and it goes through and it says, don't turn off your computer, it's installing this update, but it's just one, and it does it every time, so I imagine it's the same one.
Yeah, I'm seeing that on one of my systems, and it is a bit annoying, and I don't know if it's a problem with the update or with, because it's fairly recent.
Mm-hmm.
They may have to figure out that it's not working right, and you're just going to have to be patient until they get it.
Okay.
I was talking with a friend of mine that works for a large company, and he said they've gotten into a habit of applying all the updates as soon as they come out because they want to know if there's any problem with it, they want to deal with it right away. They don't want to, install the updates later and then find out that there's a problem. So it might be something Microsoft is just not doesn't know about yet. And it just, for example, the latest update is a Windows validation tool.
Yeah, I got that too.
Right, and I remember seeing that on someone else's machine, and I didn't see it on mine. I'm like, okay, when am I going to see this? Because I've got everything current on a number of machines I work with. And then all of a sudden it showed up like two or three days later. I'm like, oh, it finally got to me. Mm-hmm. So, you got to understand that the updates that people are getting are not coming from one computer. They're replicated across what are called server farms. So they've got to get the feedback that there's a problem, and then, go back through and,
fix it
and change it across a bunch of systems. I heard there was an initial problem with the daylight savings time, fix,
the Windows time service.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, that got pushed out and there was a problem with that. So, and then they get notification, there's a bug, didn't work right, so then they got to go back and fix it. And so, if you still continue to have a problem within a week or so, you might want to start trying to check on the MS news groups that are out there, Microsoft news groups, and see, what the fix might be.
Mm-hmm. I checked the knowledge base, and I couldn't get anywhere with that.
Yeah.
Well, this may be related, but I'm not sure. But just this morning, I started up my computer fresh. I booted it up fresh, and as soon as it went through all the startup and everything, I got a critical stop that it was my generic host process 32 was not functioning properly, and it was going to have to shut down. And then it seems to be affecting my sound card. I still get the system sounds. But I can't. Windows Media Player says that the sound card is either being accessed by another process or something's wrong with it, and it's not going to be able to do it. And now I don't have a radio in my house, and when I can't listen to WPR, I get really cranky. So I've got to have this figured out.
You might want to try have you tried uninstalling, reinstalling the sound card or the software, because it's probably built in to your board?
Yeah, it is. It's an MSI, and it's got a Realtek onboard soundboard card.
Have you tried doing that?
No, I haven't. It, like I said, it just happened this morning, but I mean, I still get the system sounds. I don't know why the operating system is able to access it sometimes, and then Windows Media Player can't know.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, if something just, you know, glitches just off by a bit or something, it doesn't take much for it to have a domino effect.
Right. Well, what is that generic host process? I don't even know what that does.
It's just something underneath, you know, the Windows needs to do.
Okay.
It's just one of many processes that it runs. If you want to know what it is, if you go to infostar.com, click on the tips page. If you click on Windows Startup, there's in that paragraph of the tip, there are these databases that I've numbered 1 through 5, and you can actually go in there, and if you key it in, you'll find the definition for it.
Okay.
All right.
Great job, guys. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks Ramsey. And Jim and Madison, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I got a question. The entertainment packages on new computers, do they have where you take a plug of television into them, or a TV cable?
Okay.
Are they ready to take and pick up the high-definition signal and do whatever needs to be done with it?
Well, that's an interesting question. There's kind of a couple of parts to that. Number one is a TV or a PC has to have the ability to accept a cable.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to have a certain kind of adapter to pull that signal in.
Right. I've seen them with it, you know.
Right. So that's called typically a TV tuner.
Yeah.
And they've actually been out for quite a number of years. But the ability to see the HD signal is dictated by the monitor that's on your desktop. So you have to have an HD-capable monitor to be able to have the PC and the TV, you know, married together.
Right.
So, for example, one of the systems I have at home, I decided to splurge, and I have a 27-inch LCD monitor / TV.
Mm.
And you can use it as a computer monitor, but it's also an HD TV. If I had a TV tuner in the PC, I would be able to look at a TV picture on my desktop while using the computer. Now, I did that a long, long time ago with Windows 98 when it came out. So I could have a little 4-inch screen of a TV playing on my desktop and have my other applications going at the same time. But since I don't have a TV tuner in the PC, the TV receives the signal from the cable, not the PC.
Oh, okay.
So does that help?
I hope it helps, as we're out of time. Jim, thank you very much for being with us today and for calling in. Peter, thank you for coming by. You'll be
always
back.
Always lots of fun, Larry.
You'll be back on April 9th.
Yep. Right
after spring break. We'll do this all over again. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Go online to infostar.com and you can pick up a copy of the top 10 list and a whole lot more. He's got lots of great information on there. Tomorrow we'll talk about raising healthy pets with Dr. Sandra Newberry of Madison. Stay with us.